And we are live here on Augusta Free Press on Facebook. I am Chris Graham, and I'll be talking you through some issues today here on this Monday, June 29th. And of course, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to just throw them right up there for those obviously watching live. If you're listening on the podcast, not much you can do there. But if you're watching live, you have some questions, comments, etc., please just feel free to jump in, and we'd love to address whatever is on your mind as well. But today we're going to talk a few things. News of the day, COVID-19 numbers in Virginia, as the Commonwealth is 2 days away from moving into phase three of the Forward Virginia reopening. We'll talk some COVID numbers and let you know that things should be proceeding pretty well in that direction. We'll talk about kids in school this fall. A number of local school systems kind of hinting as to their plans for the fall, and we'll talk about those plans, the impact, what the American Academy of Pediatricians is talking about, what their recommendations are, which seem to fly in the face of what we're hearing locally. I'll talk about sports broadcasting as we head, college sports broadcasting in particular, as we head back towards some sense of normalcy. I've worked in sports broadcasting for the last several years, and I'll kind of talk about some things I've been reading and seeing, and what impact there may be if we get to the fall and we're still dealing with the public health situation we are now. And then we'll talk today in history as we wrap up our show today. We're trying to get it within a half hour. And again, if you have any questions, comments, feel free to engage. We'd love to get a chance to engage. But first, let's talk some COVID numbers here in Virginia, specific to Virginia. And you know, I dive into the numbers every so often, at least every Monday. We'll talk, we'll do another wrap up probably Wednesday. We'll do another look, and maybe even heading into the weekend on Friday. And the numbers continue to trend positive in Virginia. The 7-day average of new reported COVID cases is 532, which is down 55.5% from the recent peak of 1195 back on May 29th. And we were doing substantially less testing back. And that's only been a month. That's literally a month ago. We were doing substantially less testing than we are now back a month ago. So the percentage rates, such as they're important, we're told they're important, so we'll pretend they're important. The percentage testing positive much lower than it was back a month ago. New cases, both the last 2 days, also below the 500 mark. So numbers trending down. These are good signs. Hospital numbers, this is the most important number. You know, you're hearing a lot about case numbers, especially in other states, Florida, Texas, Arizona, maybe California among them. You know, they're doing a substantial amount of testing in those states. I think I saw California's number for today, 101,000 tests done just today in California, 5,000 positive. That's a positivity rate of 5%, which is what we're supposed to be going for. But then you hear the number of new cases of 5,000, and you say, wow, that's 5,000 new cases. But a lot of these new cases we're seeing, at least here in the last few weeks, are of the nature of asymptomatic or limited symptoms, certainly not leading to hospitalizations. And that's the case in Virginia. The number today of hospitalizations due to COVID is at a 3-month low, 796 today. And hospitals in Virginia operating overall at 75.1% of capacity, which is well within realm of acceptable. In fact, that might be a bit low. Hospitals here in America have to make money. And one way they make money is by having people in hospitals. They have to, you know, provide services which they can charge you an arm and a leg for, almost literally. So 75% capacity is actually probably not what they want. You're seeing other states, in fact, Florida, which is supposedly going through this crisis right now, at 70% capacity. Texas is around closer to 80% capacity. And some regions within Texas are at 85% capacity. Arizona, which is another state, I know their numbers real well, been looking their numbers up on their board. They're at 85% capacity the last couple of days. And the number of Virginians with COVID-19 hospitalized is at 4.8%. Again, that's a low for the last 3 months. And then COVID ICU hospitalizations in Virginia at 11.1% of the state's hospital system's overall ICU capacity. These are all good numbers, really good numbers in Virginia. And trending in a great direction for Virginia. And so what that would mean, I mean, presumably Governor Ralph Northam will have his Tuesday press conference tomorrow at 2:00. And we'll probably wait to do our podcast, live podcast here on Facebook until after that. Presumably we'll just say we're heading to phase three. And just like he did last week, and phase three means, just to remind, restaurants and beverage establishments can open to 100% capacity provided they maintain physical distancing. So I really don't think that's going to mean much. If you've been out to eat any time in the last few weeks, I guess we went to phase two on June 5th. And my wife and I have, we've been out to eat a few times. I don't know that it feels all that different. Some places have removed some tables, kind of reconfigured a little bit, but by and large, it kind of feels normal. I mean, you didn't really think about it back in mid-March, that you were sitting, a safe physical distance from other people, but you probably were. The main difference would be obviously, bars. And in Virginia, we don't really have bars. In Virginia, you have to, a certain amount of, I think it's 50% of your sales have to come from food. So we don't just have bars that just sell alcohol and that kind of thing. But bars where you would hang out at the bar and be like, elbow to elbow with everybody and that kind of thing, that would be impacted. But going and sitting down, having a meal, not impacted. Largely, I don't think, just based on experience the last few weeks. But yeah, 100% capacity in phase three. Fitness centers can open 75% indoor capacity. Again, with physical distancing. So again, I'll say, I don't know, like, for example, you go to a gym. I mean, gyms, like every other place, you try to maximize space. You're going to still likely have, and almost assuredly have, issues where machines beside each other will only be open every other day or something like that. You'll still have issues where you have to, make sure you're cleaning surfaces and washing your hands regularly and that kind of thing. But 75% indoor capacity, that means more people can be there theoretically. Recreation entertainment venues can open up to 50% capacity. This is a big deal for movie theater owners, particularly other entertainment venues like the Wayne Theater here in town, perhaps. A maximum of 1,000 people. So what that really means is, for most movie theaters aren't 2,000 seats or whatever the case may be, but John Paul Jones Arena can't have a big concert with 15,000 people there theoretically, right? At least not in phase three. Swimming pools can resume free swim in addition to the already permitted indoor and outdoor exercise. And also your social gatherings can go from 50 to 250 people. So you can have your big blowout barbecue in the backyard, I guess, if you feel so comfortable. As if 50 wouldn't be enough, you can have 250 there now. All businesses are going to be encouraged to continue to follow physical distancing guidelines, frequently clean and sanitize high contact surfaces, and keep enhanced workplace safety measures in place. So it's basically the phase three is not, hey, we're back to, what have I called this before, running on the beach naked, having fun. It's not quite that yet. You still have to use common sense about a lot of things. And just wear your mask. I know I've said, personally, I'm still not 100% convinced of the value of the mask, but right now, wear your mask. I would say, based on my just informal mind numbering of the last few times I've been out in public, it seems to me a lot more people are wearing masks in public. When I say in public, I mean in stores and in restaurants and places like that. Feels to me like it's closer to 80% to 80%, maybe even 85-90%. Whereas even a few weeks ago, we were 50-50 at best. I think the message is largely out there. If even people like me who are ambivalent about the science are doing it out of respect for others, I think you're seeing probably more people of that nature just following in line and do it. Hey, if they're telling you to do it and they're saying if you do it, then it'll all get better. Hey, it doesn't hurt. I can't wear my glasses much because the air comes up and gets in my glasses and fogs them up. So, but if that's all I've got to deal with, it's all I got to deal with. It's not that big of a deal. So that's where we are with that. The numbers look good, I guess, is the message I really wanted to leave with folks here. The numbers really look good. So I would encourage folks to just continue to be smart. If you can telework, I think we're going to see some changes in society. And if you can telework, you might as well telework after this is over. That's just something that the more people can do it, the better, just in general for your quality of life, in addition to you're not exposing yourself to flu season next year. You know, when I say next year, you know, this fall, winter, and early spring. And so things like that. I mean, but yeah, it's turning in the right direction. It's turning in the right direction. And I think that it's something we should all be happy about. The next thing, kids in schools. I hear from my wife, who's the digital editor of Augusta Free Press. She's you know, seeing what the various, not just the school systems themselves, but her friends on social media who have kids in schools, and what they're hearing from the school systems about what school might look like this fall. And you're hearing a lot, it seems like. I mean, one school system is delaying decision and for a month until they can get some more information. Another is already coming out and saying that, you know, kids will go to school basically 2 days a week with distance learning the other 2 or 3 days a week. What I'll note is that the recommendation of the American Academy of Pediatrics is flying in the face of what our local school systems are saying. And I think it's even more extreme up in, like, I think it's Fairfax County is saying it's all going to be online this fall. Not even just a couple days a week. The American Academy of Pediatrics last week put out its guidance on what should happen in the fall. And I'll just read a quote from the report. The importance of in-person learning is well documented. There's already evidence of the negative impacts on children because of school closures in the spring of 2020. Time away from school results in social isolation, which makes it difficult for schools to identify, address important learning deficits, as well as child and adolescent physical or sexual abuse, substance use, depression, suicidal ideation. And so, yeah, here's the money, you know, money quote. Although COVID-19 appears to behave differently in children and adolescents than other common respiratory viruses, such as influenza, on which most of the current guidance regarding school closures is based. And although children and adolescents play a major role in amplifying influenza outbreaks, this does not appear to be the case with SARS-CoV-2. Although many questions remain, the preponderance of evidence indicates children and adolescents are less likely to be symptomatic and less likely to have severe disease resulting from SARS-CoV-2 infection. And policies to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 within schools must be balanced with the known harms to children, adolescents, families, and community by keeping children at home. And so what the American Academy of Pediatrics has done is issue guidance. And I've got a link on our website if you want to get more. Basically, physical distancing in schools can be as close as 3 feet for children and even teens in cases where, you know, you can't get the 6-foot rule. And that schools should weigh the benefits of strict adherence to 6 feet spacing, 6 foot spacing, with the potential downside of remote learning is the only alternative. And what we're seeing is that school systems, at least in our area, are saying because of this 6-foot rule, they can't have enough kids in classrooms that can make it so that they can have kids only, you know, kids there 5 days a week. I would suggest that the American Academy of Pediatrics probably knows better than even the public health professionals in the Virginia Department of Health as far as what the benefits of this are versus the cost. And so it would be great if we'd have more weight given, I guess we could say, to the recommendations of the pediatric healthcare community. And it's a reason for that, I guess I'll now go personal with this a bit. I wrote a column on this topic today. This is personal to me, not in the sense that I have kids, that my wife Crystal and I have kids. We don't have kids. It's personal to me because we both grew up, Crystal and I both grew up in working class backgrounds. I think it's maybe putting it charitably. school education was a great equalizer for us. And we both grew up though in homes, single parent homes, hardworking single mothers. I did the math on what my mom made. My mom was a minimum wage worker for several years after my parents got divorced. I was 13 at the time. We weren't, you know, running away rich or anything before that, but my minimum wage in the mid 80s was $3.35 an hour. That equates to $7.84 per hour in 2020 dollars. That's actually higher than the minimum wage today, which is just astounding. The minimum wage right now is $7.25 per hour. That translates to about, you know, the current minimum wage translates to about $15,000 a year. My mom's earning power with those mid 80s dollars was about $16,000 a year. She raised two kids on that. Worked weird hours. you know, I've told stories, I've written pieces about how, you know, one year I had one pair of pants to wear to school. This is in high school. You wonder why I was a social outcast. There's a reason why, right? You got one pair of pants, got a couple of shirts, and you're washing them all the time. You know, that's not a good time to not have much of a wardrobe. There's that aspect. And there's also the aspect then of access to education. Now in the mid 80s, there was no thing that anybody knew of called the internet, but I lived in a very rural part of Augusta County, the Cremora area. The bookmobile, the Augusta County Library used to have a bookmobile that would come to our trailer park once, maybe week, every other week. I can't remember how often it came, but I would go. I would remember I had to walk down halfway down the trailer park, and it was great. I got to check out books, take them back. And then county budget cuts, it took that away. So I was never getting to Fishersville. Fishersville, you know, from Cremora is probably a 30-minute drive, maybe a 20-mile drive, lots of back roads, windy back roads. When you don't have a car and you're a teenager in a rural area, it might as well have been on the other side of the world. So summer for me was a time, I mean, you know, again, I'm very fortunate that I was a smart kid, but it was a time of regression, no doubt. I mean, all I had was TV, to challenge me intellectually, if you want to say. And I think about the kids of today in 2020, you know, who grow up similar to the way I grew, or who are growing up similar to the way I grew up, you know. Internet access is something that a lot of us take for granted, but don't take it for granted if you don't have it. And high-speed internet at that. You know, that education is a great equalizer. Information is a great equalizer. But if you don't have access to it, you're way on the outside now in 2020. And I think about the kids, like, you know, I have personally, Chris and I personally have lots of friends who were upper middle class backgrounds, two parent households. They're both income earners. You know, one or both work remotely, so they're able to be home. So the idea that their kids may be home either 5 days a week or even 2 or 3 days a week while going part-time to school is not a big deal for them. They can take care of that issue. But I think of my mother, I think of Crystal's mother, raising kids by themselves. They don't have that luxury. It's something you take for granted, but it's a luxury to folks like our parents when we were growing up. You know, again, Crystal and I made the best of those situations, and we're both fortunate. We you know, graduated from college. We've been able to make lives for ourselves. But I want the next kid. I want the next kid like me, who's right now in a trailer park or in an apartment complex, who is a smart kid that you know, maybe is coming from a hardscrabble background. I want them to be able to have the same opportunities that I had. And I worry that, you know, school year ending this past school year in mid-March, and then now maybe an entire fall at least with limited school opportunities, you're going to lose kids. And, you know, I don't want to lose the next me. You know, I think of me, what if I was growing up now and instead of having the opportunities I had to graduate second in my class in high school, graduate with a degree from the University of Virginia, if I ended up working in a grocery store the rest of my life, being the same smart guy that just never had opportunity. You know, personally for me, that would suck. And I think for the world, maybe, you know, you miss out on whatever productivity I've been able to offer the last 25 years. And I think about that multiplied by how many people could be affected by this now, how many kids who maybe are going to miss out on opportunities because of this now. So this isn't just a political argument. You know, I'm a liberal Democrat. The reason I'm a liberal Democrat is I want opportunities for people like the kid like me who grew up poor. I know that it was access to education that made it possible for me to be the person I am now. And it really bothers me that others who share the political beliefs that I do don't see this as the most important thing. And so I would just advocate strongly, at least give it some thought. And then check out what the American Academy of Pediatrics has to say on the topic. Because, you know, I think that their recommendations should really, you know, hold water as far as that goes. Let's see. And I see that there, the column I wrote and also the story that we wrote on the American Academy of Pediatrics guidance, both linked on the thread here on this Facebook Live. So if you have a chance, you can check those out either now or later. I'm gonna switch gears now. I've been talking the important stuff. Now let's talk some fun stuff, right? I've read some pieces over the last few days about how sports is coming back, which, yay, something to distract us in a good way. One thing I thought about with that is, you know, I've worked in sports broadcasting. Folks may know that who are watching now, listening in on the archive. I've worked in sports broadcasting. I think I finally dated it since I did a game in 2014, but I started working on a regular basis doing ESPN 3, ESPN Plus, and radio broadcasting of college sports in 2015. And, you know, what I'm thinking through here is, like, for example, watched the NASCAR race yesterday and their broadcast team is still working remotely. They're working in Charlotte. Yesterday's race was in Pocono, the Pocono Speedway up in Pennsylvania. And by and large, I don't know you would notice that. If you didn't know that, I don't think you knew that. You know, that you would have said, hey, something doesn't seem right about the way they're talking here. Like, they don't seem like they're at their track. you know, we're still 2 months. Today's June 29th. You know, I've worked the last couple of fall seasons, if you call them fall seasons, starting in late August, doing play-by-play of men's and women's college soccer on ESPN3, ESPN+. Those are in late August. That's 2 months away. And then football season for me, I've been the radio play-by-play broadcaster on VMI home football games dating back to 2016. And so that would start for me. I think the first game is like the second week or maybe the third week of September. I think the second week UVA plays VMI in Charlottesville. And at least as of before COVID, we were working on a deal where I was going to be the sideline reporter on the VMI broadcast. We'll see how that works if there's sideline reporters allowed coming up in September. But there's a long time between now and late August, early September. There's a lot of stuff that's going to happen, hopefully positive. But if that, what I wrote the column about today was, if the season started now, if my broadcast season started now, what would it be like? What would be different about it? You know, lots of things there. And I'll say that, and then I'll say this at the top level of the sport, you know, like the NASCAR guys, you know, they're more impacted than I think I'd be at the local level now. If I had a game this week, you know, I would probably have a very similar situation to what I normally have. Soccer for me, for example, it's a pretty bare bones operation. I think I'm trying to think how many cameras there are. There's one on the ones adjacent to the goal on the my right side, another camera, you know, to the left. There's one near me. I sit at midfield, but I sit outside under a tent, elevated at the midfield stripe by myself. I do the play-by-play and color, if you want to say that. And I'm separated by a good distance. The folks in the press box are the ones who run the actual production of it, you know, and I'm connected by a headset to be able to know what. And then I've got a TV monitor that I watch, and I've got the game in front of me. So soccer would be no different. Outside's great, right? If I had a game to do, today's Monday, if I had a game to do Wednesday, I'd sit outside. It'd be hot. It's hot in August as well when I do games. But I'd be outside breathing fresh air, you know, and I'd be near nobody. There's literally nobody beside me. I don't have a spotter or anything like that. It's just me. I'm my own spotter. I've got stats in front of me. I got everything else. So soccer would be no different. Football would probably be a little different, I imagine. You know, I'm kind of giving you some insight into how broadcasting works at VMI, where I do the home radio play-by-play. I've got a little booth, if you want to call it, a little room. I sit next to, in fact, there's the two rooms side by side separated by plexiglass, where the home team radio sits, and then, you know, that other side of the plexiglass, the visiting team radio has a booth. In that booth, it is kind of tight. It's tight. I mean, it's not tight for normal situations. In normal situations, it's a room. It's a room where two people sit. I have a broadcast partner, Rick Cruz, and he's my color guy, and we call the games. I'm the, you know, and we interact and everything else. Normally, it's no deal at all. You know, we can look at each other. We can watch the TV monitor replays and stuff like that. It's fine. In a social distancing situation, we're not 6 feet apart. I mean, we're, you know, he's right. Our chairs almost touch. Sometimes we stand, you know, I'll sometimes stand during the game just to, you know, get on my feet a little bit, but we're close. That may have to change. If the season started, if there was a game Saturday, that would have to change. I you know, 2 months from now, 2.5 months from now, I'm not sure. If we're beyond phase three and, you know, things are somewhat back to normal, we may not have to even think about anything. But if the season started Saturday, yeah, one or the other of us may have to sit in the main press box area and be separated from other folks, and there'd be a little bit of difference there. It could be that there'd be a decision made to just do a radio TV simulcast and have, you know, have either the TV do radio or a combination of TV and radio kind of work together. It'd be a little different, certainly. At the national level, I don't know what we'll see. Of course, the season again starts, football season starts in a couple of months, and then baseball starting in about a month, actually less than a month away. I read a report that Bob Uecker, the longtime voice of the Milwaukee Brewers in his mid to late 80s now, intends to be on site, on scene, on location for Brewers games, both home and away, to be able to call games. And he does, I think he does his games by himself, if I recall correctly, his radio broadcast. I think he does those solo. So, you know, not an issue for him in that context. But yeah, it's different. I mean, it's a different era. Now, I'll say this too, though. We kind of discovered by accident a few years ago, Scott German, if you're watching or listening on the archive, will remember this. There was a UVA Wake Forest basketball game 3 or 4 years ago. I don't remember exactly when it was. And I remember actually Scott stuck around. I didn't stick around. He told me and sent me the video link, stuck around for a post-game interview with Tony Bennett after Virginia won. The game was down in Winston-Salem. We didn't go cover it. We watched it on TV, and then Scott happened to stick around long enough to see that Tony was on a headset interviewing with the broadcast team. Now, what was odd about that when you first saw it was like, why would he be interviewing on a headset? You know, the broadcasters are there, right? Turns out they weren't. They were working. Winston-Salem is about an hour from Charlotte, roughly, maybe 45 minutes, an hour from Charlotte. The broadcast crew was in Charlotte calling the game that night. And that was, I mean, this, they're talking about 3 or 4 years ago. This is long before COVID. There were no public health guidance or anything like that. It was just they broadcast from Charlotte. One little trick to the trade, I'll tell you, is that when I'm at the game, calling the game, I'm watching the TV monitor. And I didn't know this at first, you know, first half season, I probably didn't know that I shouldn't be watching the game out here in front of the, you know, right in front of me, that I should be watching a TV monitor. And I would always get these buzzing in my ear. Hey, we're getting ready to do the replay. And replay, I'm calling the game here, you know? And I learned that if I was going to be good at broadcasting the game, I needed to actually tell you a little bit about what you were seeing on your screen. So that's, I came to learn, you know, I don't know that obviously it's great to be at the location and, you know, we've always just done it that way, but I could also tell you that, you know, if you're good at the job, if you've got people who are good at the job, that they don't need to be there. So that's how NASCAR can get away with it. That's how some, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what the TV networks do with baseball and with football coming up. I would expect, again, baseball is a month away. I, you know, baseball may have some issues. Football in 2 months, I mean, you know, I don't want to put myself on the record too much, but it feels to me that things are winding down, and we may be sort of beyond this, at least for a time, by the fall. And if that's the case, you know, you may not see a lot different in terms of how broadcasts are handled, but that doesn't mean you're not thinking about it now. So, and we're certainly putting a lot of thought into it now. And as a result, I'm having to put some thought into it, right? So, want to finish up the show here, and thanks for being here with us on the show. As we're wrapping up, I've said I wanted to keep things to about a half hour. I want to do it today in history. I'm a nerd like that. Not a lot on today, but the two things that I saw were really big, I thought. 1613, Shakespeare's Globe Theater in London, England, on June 29th, 1613. Shakespeare's Globe Theater burns down during the performance of Henry VIII. And that relates to me. My hometown, which is one town over, Stanton, Virginia, has a recreation of the Globe Theater, the Blackfriars Playhouse American Shakespeare Center. So that's a little bit of history there. And then here's something to think about. 1964. June 29, 1964, Civil Rights Act of 1964 passes the U.S. Senate after an 83-day filibuster. Boy, it tells you, you know, I know we haven't come a long way yet. We're not where we need to be yet in terms of racial justice, racial equality, race relations, but 83-day filibuster before passing the Civil Rights Act. And that's something to keep in mind. We may not have gone everywhere, or, you know, come the full distance where we need to be. We've come a long way. 83-day filibuster against the Civil Rights Act, led by Democrats. Hey, funny how politics has changed since 1964, huh? So on that note, I will say, I'm give one more look to see if there's any comments or any questions, and there are not. So we will wrap up for the afternoon. Thank you for joining us here on the live podcast on Facebook. And if you listen on the archive, thank you for joining us there as well. We'll be back tomorrow, talk some more news. On Wednesday this week, we will have Rod Mullins talking NASCAR. That'll be at 5:30 on Wednesday. That's an every week thing. Tomorrow, we're probably, again, going to wait until after Governor Ralph Northam's press conference, which that's at 2 o'clock. So anytime 2:30 and after, we'll kind of hint to it on Facebook here, social media here. But we'll have that news and other news as well. I'm hoping to get Josh Deal back on. We haven't talked with Josh Pro Wrestling for a few weeks now, but we want to talk about the speaking out movement and some other developments in pro wrestling. Scott German needs to join me this week, too. Scott and I have started a weekly baseball podcast. We haven't started a season yet, but you know, Scott and I are just itching to talk about sports. So, my assignment to Scott last week was to, you know, let me know about stuff in baseball that he needs to keep up with. He tends to keep up with. And so we'll have that this week as well. Thank you for joining us here on the show. Appreciate your time, and everyone, please have a great and safe Monday.